Let's turn our attention to Los Angeles and E3, the big electronic entertainment exhibition. Basically, Christmas for gamers this year. We got the details on the new Xbox One. We got more details on the PlayStation 4. And we heard a little bit about the games. We heard a lot, in fact, about the games that many of us will be playing over the next 12 months or so. With me to kick over the traces after the second full day of the show are Matt Lees from Video Gamer, veteran games journalist Guy Cocker, and family gaming expert Andy Robertson. Good evening to you, gentlemen. How is sunny Los Angeles?
It's pretty good.
Fantastic. Well, good to hear it, I would imagine. E3 is something I've always wanted to attend. I have to admit that I spent about 7 hours yesterday sitting in front of a computer screen watching all the press conferences as they happened. Let's get the big one out of the way first. Let's talk hardware. Let's talk the next console generation. And we really now know everything we're going to know for a while, don't we, about the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One. And gentlemen, it's fair to say, I think that Sony won, didn't they?
Yeah, the buzz that I've been, everyone I've spoken to over here feels that Sony's really, really taken the bull by the horns and really launched itself in a really strong position for next gen with the PlayStation 4. I think two things have really kind of sealed the deal. One is the price. It's a lot cheaper than the Xbox One. And the other is this thorny issue around used games and what you can do with them. So whether you can buy a game essentially and then have that disc to do what you want with it, or whether it's tied to a console and then unable to be sold or given to a friend. And a lot of gamers really seem to care a lot about that issue, and PlayStation have said that's not going to be a problem on PlayStation 4, but Xbox has said, you know, they've said a lot of different things and basically confused many, many gamers.
Guy, you're right on you. I mean, Matt, the big moment in Sony's press conference, which was the fourth of the press conferences that happened yesterday, was right towards the end of the press conference when they just came right out and said, you can play used games. And everybody cheered. It was the biggest cheer of the day. And then 2 minutes later, they just came right out and said, look, we're going to be $100 cheaper at launch than the Xbox One.
I mean,
that was
game to
the
match. It's crazy. And actually, it was insane. I mean, actually, you know what? I didn't see it until about an hour and a half ago, because I've been making these little abridged versions of the conferences, and I've just been watching it and seeing the reaction of the crowd. It's just absolutely insane. Like, it was like Microsoft left so many own goals. All Sony had to do was storm in and just kick them all in. And I mean, yeah, fantastic. It's such a great turnaround, because to be honest, a month or two ago, you asked me, I would have said Xbox are going to nail it. You know, Sony are dead in the water. But they absolutely smashed it. You know, the DRM thing, I think they thought that, you know, people would just suck it up and deal with it. I think they used those exact words in the past, in fact. But it's not true. People really care about being able to trade games in and lend them to their friends. And the fact they've come out being so much cheaper. I mean, a lot of my job these days is being quite snarky and making comedy videos, taking the mick out of stuff. And to be honest, I've struggled to find much to take the mick out of with Sony this time. They've done a cracking job.
Andy, let's just nail it down for people who perhaps aren't quite so familiar with what the issue is. The problem, as a lot of people see it with the Xbox One, talking about used games, is effectively that you won't be able to do what you can do at the minute, which is go onto eBay and buy a disc that somebody else has owned, or go into a store and buy a game that someone else has traded in. You can't go home, put it in your machine and play, because it has to be installed and it has to be checked with the Microsoft service. That's basically the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's sort of, I guess, cutting into that secondhand games market. But I think maybe going back to the sort of point on price, I think one thing you need to factor in is the fact that the Xbox is coming with that Kinect camera. And as I understand it, that the PlayStation price doesn't include their PlayStation Eye. So in that respect, I think there's a slightly more level playing field. And I hear what the other guys are saying here, and I think that is the perspective of gamers. But for sort of maybe people who aren't so avid into their games, when they arrive at the decision about an Xbox One or PlayStation 4, which will be a bit down the line, I think some of these issues simply won't be on the table.
Yeah, Andy, I mean, you're the family gaming expert, and Kinect, I suppose, in the last generation was seen as a grab for the casual market, the family market. It's good fun. It's a camera that tracks your movements, if you're not familiar with it. You stand in front of your TV with this sensor attached, and you can wave your arms around, and the game essentially is supposed to respond to what you do. It didn't work massively well, though, did it, the last version of Kinect? Or at least not as well as Microsoft had promised people it would work.
Yeah, I mean, I think with these things, you know, you try it out sort of in the lab and in a demonstration room, and it works perfectly. And in the home, you have to do a bit of work by setting it up, making sure the room is lit relatively well. If you do that, though, you do get a return, and the sort of the experiences you have with Kinect, I think it can be sort of easy to underestimate, because the feel of playing a game without holding anything is entirely different to holding a lump of plastic and pressing buttons. What's happening in your hands as a human being is simply a different thing with a Kinect controller.
In a way...
The biggest problem in the UK, though,
Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say the biggest problem in the UK, though, was fairly major in the fact that you need so much space for the first Kinect. You know, you got, unless you live in a big house with a massive living room, you couldn't really do that much with it. But it seems like one of the improvements they're making with a new Xbox is they're really going to sharpen that up so you can do stuff with a limited amount of room. Because to be honest, the first Kinect was based around American living rooms, and we don't really have that luxury over here.
Yeah, it was
the sort of the space getting it set up, we had to sort of play at a slight angle. And so that was a compromise. And it was good to hear Microsoft sort of being, I guess, quite upfront about that and saying, look, that is an issue, but that this new version of Kinect is a higher resolution and you'll be able to play it sort of stood closer.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I wonder with the way the gaming market is going is we saw when the introduction of the Nintendo Wii last generation, and we saw with Kinect this play for what they call the casual market, people who aren't going to sit down for hours and play Call of Duty online, people who want to play with their kids, games like Rabbids games on the original Wii and Just Dance, which were big hits. And in a way, you see, it seems to me like you've got Nintendo with the Wii U positioning themselves again, slightly less casual than they have been, but still fairly casual. You've got Sony going for the hardcore gaming market. Look, used games, discs, grab a controller. You know, you don't have to have a Kinect-style accessory to make the console work. And then Microsoft left in this middle ground, all-in-one entertainment system, which in a way could work, one supposes, and sort of grab the entire market, or it might just get squeezed out.
Yeah, they're trying to do too much. I mean, like, it is the Xbox One. It's in the name. It's the one device for playing games, watching TV, Skyping with your friends, playing with games with the kids. But it's, I take Andy's point. I understand what he's saying with Kinect, and it's an advanced piece of tech. But you know, people don't want it. I would struggle to find anyone who really cares about Kinect. People really care about their Wii. You know, that's a great family experience. There's some great games on it. But does anyone really care about Kinect? I mean, it's got no great games in my mind. Even the family stuff is like, it doesn't really work properly.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point.
I'd say
let me just bring in this text from Chris in Bournemouth, if I can, who texted us on 85058, because he wants to talk about Nintendo, naturally the emphasis tends to be on Microsoft and on Sony at the moment because of the big announcements yesterday. But we had the Nintendo Direct press conference a little earlier on. What is yesterday over here, and what was earlier on where you guys are? I mean, Guy, just give me your thoughts. I mean, Chris is asking what Nintendo needs to do to sell more Wii U consoles, because it's been a bit of a failure so far, hasn't it?
Yeah, so they need to do two things, really, which is get the core Nintendo franchises like Mario, like Zelda, like Donkey Kong. I played those games today. They're excellent. The new Mario game is really, really good. They need to get those on that console, but they're not happening until the end of the year at the earliest, probably more like 2014. So you've got another 6 months of pretty much no games coming to the console, to be frank. And they also need to get games out that are going to appeal to the mainstream audience. So Wii Fit, I mean, that's a definite win for them. Again, not coming till next year. So they're in a bit of a struggling area. I don't think even a price cut for that machine would help them out at this stage.
Andy, what do you reckon?
I mean, I think Nintendo will carry on doing what they do good, which is making really good games and sort of keeping their eye on that ball of offering detailed experiences to families that fit the family sort of setup. So a lot of the Wii U games will actually accommodate up to five players. So you have four on the main screen, and then a fifth player is playing on that tablet controller in their hands. And again, it hits that similar note for me, like Kinect, that it offers a genuinely different experience. Now, the issue they've got is how to communicate that, because unless you actually play some of these games, it's not something that you can see on a TV screen in an advert and pick it up. And I think that's how they're struggling. And it's really an issue of communication for me rather than a games library, because I think the games are there, but they obviously need to keep them coming. But the thing is communicating what the Wii U has to offer.
Matt,
they've still not addressed that on a marketing perspective. People think the Wii U is an add-on for the existing Wii. It's horrible marketing.
Yeah, Matt, I was going to ask whether you think that there is a danger now that because the Wii U is relatively underpowered when it comes to this next generation of console hardware, it's about as powerful as the sort of Xbox 360, PlayStation 3 were, that it had that initial kind of market lead and it didn't sell very well, and it's just going to get buried by the juggernauts from Sony and Microsoft now.
Yeah, to be honest, I mean, that's pretty much what is going to happen. I mean, the Wii, it's not really a power thing either. The Wii was a fantastic thing because you just had a go on it and you immediately thought, I want this experience in my house. It was just a fun toy and everyone loved it. The Wii U did something different, because that's what Nintendo always do. They innovate. But this time they haven't hit the mark. But you know what? It doesn't matter. People keep talking about Nintendo being in trouble, but they made so much money with the Wii and the DS Lite, which was another great bit of family gear, that they've saved that money. They haven't invested it all into R&D. Companies like Sony and Microsoft are obsessed with taking over the living room and dominating that and owning that experience in the same way that Apple owns like devices in your pocket. And Nintendo don't work like that. So I think the Wii U, I don't think it's going to turn it around, to be honest. I think they would have had to show us something really big that sells the hardware. Getting these Mario games is all very good, but you know, the Wii had Wii Sports, and that sold the system, that one game. And the Wii U, it's been out for a while now, and we can't see that game anywhere. So I think it might be the next time that Nintendo might nail it again.
Matt Lees from Video Gamer, veteran games journalist Guy Cocker, and family gaming expert Andy Robertson. Stay with us. We'll talk more after the news and sport about what came out of E3. We'll talk about some of the big games on the horizon as well as the hardware, and we'll find out what games are exciting you from what you've seen and what you've played at the show. You're listening to Up All Night. Tom Green here with you until 5 o'clock. We are talking games. We're talking E3 in the company of Matt Lees from Video Gamer, veteran games journalist Guy. I feel bad saying that, Guy, every time I introduce you. Veteran games journalist makes you sound like
makes me sound old.
It does.
Yeah,
it does.
I'll take the compliment.
Seasoned games journalist Guy Cocker and family gaming expert Andy Robertson. We were talking about hardware before the news and sport. We'll come on to talk about games in a second. I just want to read a couple of texts out. Steve J echoing the point that we were making about Kinect, saying I have an Xbox 360 with Kinect and a PS3 with Move, which is a sort of PlayStation equivalent where it sort of tracks your ping pong, light up ping pong ball on your controller. He says, in my opinion, the PS3 Move is so much better and more accurate than the Kinect, which even after the tedious setup and regular reconfiguration is inaccurate and unreliable, just echoing what we were saying about the disappointment many consumers had with Kinect. And a question from Pete in Macclesfield. Guy, you can answer this. He says, my son says when the new Xbox comes out, he will be unable to use his current one. Is that really right? Sounds like a canny son just pitching for a new console to me. That guy?
Yeah, he sounds smart. Yeah, that is correct. You need to buy, yeah, it's not going to be backwards compatible. The PlayStation 4 is backwards compatible in a way. They're launching a cloud-based service which will allow you to stream games from remote servers. They're going to be launching that in 2014, so there's kind of backwards compatibility in a way.
You can still use his old console, though. He just can't use the old games in the new console.
That's true, but don't tell his dad that.
No. Yeah. Pete, your son needs a new console. Just stamp up and buy it. It's fine. So let's move on to talk about the games, because amongst the hardware announcements, we saw a raft of exclusives for various consoles. We saw some of the big sequels and some new IP as well, some new franchises that are set to be hitting the shelves over the next year or so. Matt, what excited you most about what you saw over the last 24 hours or so in terms of games?
I think what excited me the most was probably colour, really. It was nice to see so many colourful games appearing. Because we've kind of been... Because this console cycle has lasted such a long time, we've had, you know, the PS3 and the Xbox 360 for about 10 years, it kind of has felt very kind of lots of sequels and repetitions. And it's nice to see publishers bringing out some games that look really different. It reminds me of how it was when the Xbox 360 was about to come out. So there's games like Sunset Overdrive that look very kind of wacky and strange. And but also like the online stuff is really amazing. There's this very much an emphasis on these kind of ongoing worlds that just continue regardless of whether or not your console's on, and you can just dip in and out of them. And these big multiplayer experiences like nothing we've really played before. And I mean, Activision and Bungie's game Destiny particularly is just very impressive. The fact that it's a bit like Halo, basically. It's made by the guys who made Halo, but it's in this big, massive world where dropships, and it's kind of bonkers. I can't really explain it, to be honest.
I did watch the demo. It did look exciting. I'm not quite sure I understand what the sort of setting is, but it almost looked like a sort of rundown... It looked a bit like, what's the film set in South Africa with the aliens? I can remember whether it's District 9 or District 13. Oh, there were kind of hints of that, a sort of a hot country.
Yeah.
And some sort of post-apocalyptic event having happened. And it, it looked remarkable. Another game I was excited about, Guy, I don't know if this one caught your fancy a little bit, is a game called Titanfall.
Yeah, I think from the journalist I've been speaking to, it might be the game of the show. I mean, it is a shooter, and it is from the guys, well, a lot of the guys that made Call of Duty. It's got mech-based combat, which I don't know if that might turn people off, in the mainstream at least. But it was very beautifully presented, great gameplay, a very traditional shooter in a lot of ways, but it just looked very exciting to play, lots of wow moments. But again, I think there's a recurrent theme in E3 where it's like you don't fully understand how these games are going to work. I think that one is going to be always online, you've got to play it multiplayer. But again, there's always these sort of grey areas about how these games are actually going to work.
Andy, what did you see that you liked? The Ubisoft presentation yesterday had a lot of what we might call family games. There was some Rayman titles in there. Looked pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot on offer. And there seems to be some really imaginative ways to play games that we're seeing. I particularly like Tearaway on the PlayStation Vita. Mm. It's created a sort of out of... It looks like it's created out of paper, but the novelty is, at the end of a particular level, rather than being rewarded with points, you could actually print out some of these little papercraft models and then go away and make something physical and real. So that's quite nice. I like some of the control stuff again back on the Xbox. So there's a game called Project Spark where you actually sort of create your own little experiences. You create your own games that you're given some tools and you use those to create a world and put characters in it. And it uses a combination of Kinect and their tablet controller, Smart Glass, to make that an experience that should be a lot simpler, because those game maker type experiences are traditionally quite complex. I'm hoping that will simplify it.
Yeah, it reminded me of Little Big Planet, which was a big hit on the PS3 and subsequently on the Vita, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And then we're seeing that again in Disney Infinity. There's a toy box mode in that game, and you use the Disney characters and you make your own challenges and sort of sports themed games, or really whatever your imagination takes you to do. And with Infinity, that's a game that's using physical toys to unlock content in the game, sort of going head to head with Skylanders Swap Force this year. So I think there's some interesting sort of pairings off, not just in the hardware, but also in the games themselves.
Yeah, Skylanders has made a ton of money, hasn't it? I guess it's a model that lots of people will be picking up on because it's got that whole collect them all, you know, kids bothering their parents, I've got to have the next toy, and it all feeds into the whole ecosystem. Question on the text from Chris on 85058. It's a question for everyone in LA. He says he wants to know your biggest surprise game at E3. So not necessarily the best, but the biggest surprise. Guy, what was your biggest surprise?
It's not necessarily a good surprise, but I was surprised at how much Beyond Two Souls, which was a very exciting looking game starring Ellen Page and Willem Dafoe from the makers of Heavy Rain, that now looks like it's a completely different game. It's like about a super soldier now. It's got become a lot less interesting. So I don't know if that's I think that's a bad thing, basically. But yeah, the biggest surprise, The Witcher 3 was looking absolutely fantastic. Mirror's Edge 2 was announced. I think we all knew that was going to happen. It was heavily rumoured anyway. But there was a game called The Division from Ubisoft, which is actually a Tom Clancy game. They didn't say that to the end of the demo, but that was probably the best surprise that I saw. A really, really solid looking game for next-gen consoles. It's a massively multiplayer game again, but it looks like a cross between maybe Gears of War and the recently released The Last of Us.
Isn't everything from Ubisoft a Tom Clancy game these days?
Pretty much, yeah.
It's interesting. It's another massively multiplayer game. I wonder if, you know, we had the kind of HD generation with the last consoles, if this is going to be the massively multiplayer generation, if that's going to be the thing that ties a lot of the biggest releases together. Matt, your biggest surprise of E3?
I think my biggest surprise was something that had been rumoured for a long time, but I forgot it was being rumoured, so it completely blindsided me. And it was when they announced, well, it was kind of more of a tease than anything else at the Sony conference, and they just came up and I thought, that looks a bit like Mad Max. And then it was like, oh my God, it's a Mad Max game. And I love the film Mad Max so much that I will just throw money at that as long as it's even half good.
Who's the developer on that? It was somebody with a good track record and I've forgotten who it was.
I can't remember either, to be honest. I haven't had a lot of sleep.
Guy, can you help us out? Who's the developer of the Mad Max game?
I'm furiously Googling, so I don't think I know either.
I'll come back to you. I'll come back. No, it's fine. I'll come back to them.
It's Avalanche Studios. It's
there you go. Just Cause 2. Yeah, Just Cause, which was a great game. I particularly enjoyed that. Andy, Chris wants to know your big surprise of E3.
Well, I think hearing a bit more about Quantum Break from Remedy on Xbox, Xbox One, which is a game that combines a sort of TV series with action that you control yourself. And it seems to be interesting how, you know, which bits of the TV series affect the game and vice versa. And there's a branching story. So that was really good. Also, had some hands-on time with Forza 5. What surprised me there was the Xbox One controller. And they put, you have rumble in the controllers you hold to give you sort of a feedback. But they put little rumble motors in the triggers. So your index fingers have a little sort of force feedback as you're sort of driving the car. And I wasn't expecting that to really be a game changer, but actually it evoked quite an emotional response, and this really made the game much more exciting. So I was surprised.
Fascinating. Right, we've only got a minute or so left, so I'm going to one last question for the three of you. I'm going to go around the room, as it were, the virtual room. I want to know, in one word, what is the one thing we're going to be talking about in 1 year's time at the next E3? Guy, I'm going to start with you. In one word, what is the big issue going to be in a year's time?
It's it's going to be DRM still. It feels like that's the issue that everyone's talking about. And maybe it'll have been resolved at this time next year. But yeah, DRM and whether what you can do with your games in future and how they're going to work and whether you buy them or you rent them or lease them from the companies that make them is definitely the hot topic.
DRM, the word from Guy. Andy, what's in one word, what's the big issue in a year's time, do you think?
I think price. I mean, I think that at the moment, that's a big drive, and I think it will continue to be. And value for money along with that is something, particularly for families, is going to be top of the agenda for a long time to come.
And same from you, Matt. One word, what are we going to be talking about in a year's time?
I think online's a big issue. I think all these games have these huge like multiplayer experiences, but they require a lot of people. And I mean, to be honest, a lot of these games, if you don't sell lots of copies, you're kind of screwed. So I think that's going to be an issue.
Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed. Matt, Guy and Andy, an absolute pleasure to be joined by three luminaries of the games journalism industry to talk about E3. You're listening to 5 Live.